It's good to have the broadcasters in town. I've had a good relationship, I think. Some of you around the room maybe would agree or disagree. I don't know, but a good relationship with your membership over the years. Always attend the conference in Kansas City. Had done that for a long time prior to being the director of agriculture in Missouri. As a director on the United Soybean Board, served on the United Soybean Board for 11 years, and was at the NAFB conference in Kansas City over 10 years. I don't know exactly what the number was, but always enjoyed that opportunity, the opportunity to visit with farm broadcasters across the country. This is not an attempt at pandering at all, but I always do talk about the importance of farm broadcasters across the country. You all are allies of the industry. If there is good news to be told, you're really good at that. And if there's news that's not sometimes so good, you're really good at that as well. Being able to craft a story and tell a story that is important to producers, important to the industry, certainly important to the communities that you serve. And so for that, I want to say thank you, and I mean that very seriously. The role that you all play is really important. We have, in this role at USDA, that relationship with farm broadcasters, getting the word out is really, really important. We have external affairs. We have outreach within the agency that work very hard to align with stakeholders, work really hard to certainly cultivate relationships with you all. Just being able to spread that net a little wider and the role that you play, again, is critical. I don't think it's any surprise to anyone really kind of where we are in agriculture right now. It's really no matter what sector you want to look at, we refer to dairy quite a bit and the situation that the dairy industry's in economically. Passage of the new farm bill, and I'll talk just a little bit about some provisions in the new farm bill related to the Farm Service Agency, but the dairy industry is certainly has seen better days. I don't know exactly how to say it, but it's not a really good story at this point. We're always hopeful that those dynamics will change and that gets better. The grain sector right now is a little difficult, and the beef sector is not the greatest, but. But I think that the Congress went through and worked through a farm bill, a lot of thoughtful consideration as it relates to existing programs that Farm Service Agency administer and how could they improve those. And I think they did. I think they did a really good job in addressing. Addressing some pieces in the 14 legislation and making it better in the 18 version. And dairy is one of those. So we had the margin protection program for dairy under the 14 farm bill. Lots of interest, lots of sign up at the beginning when that program was rolled out. And it really just didn't accomplish the things that I think the authors thought that it would. And so there were some adjustments for a short period of time due to the Bipartisan Budget Act that was passed in February of 2018, and then they really took a look at it in the new bill. And so Margin Protection Program is now Dairy Margin Coverage, DMC. I think there was a band a while back, Run DMC.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I remember it. So anyway, dairy margin coverage program, and so the those issues in MPP that were really not working well, they really took a look at. So raise the coverage levels, opportunities for producers to select higher coverage levels, lowered the premiums. And then offered an opportunity, or will offer an opportunity, for those producers that had paid premiums in the old margin protection program to be able to apply those as a 75% credit toward premiums in the new program, or get a 50%, the value of those premiums minus any payments that they would have gotten, a 50% cash payment. So offering some flexibility around that, I think, was really important. There's a lot of interest certainly in the program. We'll begin sign up in on June 17th for the DMC program, and we've been working kind of simultaneously across the different programs that we'll administer at Farm Service Agency, but the dairy program was priority one to get it, to get sign up for producers out the door first. And so we're on track to be able to do that. For a farm bill that was not, I don't know what the right word is, transformative or whatever, this one was more fixing some things that already existed. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. Certainly the process that we would go through is, after the farm bill was agreed upon and passed, President signed it on the 20th of December, we started looking then at the legislation between the two bills, the 14 and the 18 farm bill, what was different, and then figuring out what decisions that needed to be made. There were some decisions at my level, some decisions at the undersecretary's level, and then ultimately some went to the secretary for decisions. And so we did that across all of those programs, whether it was CRP or livestock disaster programs, ARC PLC, the dairy margin coverage program, and by comparing the language from the two bills, that kind of gives you kind of what the lift is going forward. So, how much work do we need from an IT perspective? So modernizing our systems to be able to administer those programs, writing the handbooks, the guidance for all of our employees, nearly 11,000 employees across 2,124 county offices that are going to administer these programs. So figuring out what needs to be changed in the handbooks and the guidance, what needs to be changed from that IT perspective. From an administrative standpoint, we've got two really large assets. One is our people, and second is all of our IT platforms that support the administration of those programs. So anyway, figuring out what that is and what the timeline is, USDA and I think the federal government in general are really fond of acronyms. And so I learned a new one. You all may know this one, but LOE, level of effort. And so anytime we look at what needs to be done to get that piece of legislation, get it ready to administer, and primarily on that IT side, is we look at the level of effort, and that gives us a timeline and a cost to be able to accomplish that. So ARC PLC, again, some changes there, I think, that were positive. I know I remember personally trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my Title I commodities covered under ARC PLC in 2014. And I went to, I was the ag director in Missouri at the time, so I should probably have figured out, really how that program worked. But I just wasn't real comfortable when I made my elections whether I was putting the right crop in the right program at the right time. And if you remember, in 2014, when we made those elections, that was for the life of the farm bill. So, a lot of things can change in 5 years. And so I would say that probably a lot of producers that made those elections in 2014, as market situations change, they probably would have maybe made some different elections had they had the chance. Well, the new farm bill allows for that. Producers will make an election in 19. We're going to start sign up for ARC PLC around September 1st. And that election is also good for the 2020 crop. And then producers will have an opportunity, if they so choose, in 2021, 2022, and 2023 to make different elections if they if it looks like that would be the right decision to make. So, again, I think positive improvements there. From a CRP standpoint, certainly one of our really kind of foundational programs. You know, the work or the accomplishments that producers have been able to gain through voluntary conservation efforts with CRP really since the beginning in 1985, I think, are monumental. You know, the amount of soil erosion that's been prevented, the improvements to water quality from those first contracts in 1985, and there was even a component then. I remember very well a component of a little bit of supply reduction, and soil erosion prevention was kind of the platform for CRP back when it first started. But it has certainly evolved a lot since then. That was general signups. We still have general opportunities for general signup and continuous signup. Continuous is more of those targeted areas where you're dealing with certain resource concerns, whether it's riparian buffers, filter strips, those kind of things that that really really can provide some benefit from a water quality, environmental perspective. So. Not a lot of changes in CRP, although the cap has now been raised by the end of this farm bill. 27 million acres will be the cap. And so Congress recognized the need for additional acres in CRP. A lot of decisions around that. You know, where do we prioritize those acres? And those discussions are still ongoing. We're kind of getting that finalized, but nothing to report on at this point as far as what those decisions will be as far as priorities go. But again, our standing disaster programs primarily unchanged. There were some payment caps on some that were raised. ECP, for example, our livestock disaster programs, either no cap or the cap was raised and it goes across livestock indemnity program, livestock forage program. So I think, again, Congress realized that there was a need. It was a little restrictive, some of those standing disaster programs and the payment limitations. You know, if you have if you're a good sized producer and you have a loss due to a disaster, kind of getting pigeonholed by a cap was probably not the best approach. And so that's been remedied as well. Our ECP program, for those of you in the Midwest, it's going to be highly utilized from the flooding that happened in March. I think nearly 50 counties in Nebraska have made application, and then counties in Iowa, Missouri, to this point through the from those March storms. We're not very far removed from the hurricanes last fall in Florida and Georgia. That's where our ECP program steps in and helps with disaster assistance to producers there as well. So. Lots of things going on with the Farm Service Agency. We've got, trying to stand up the Farm Bill, get it out the door, while we have those things that we do every year, acreage reporting. You know, our spring planning, acreage report deadline is July 15th. That is certainly a heavy lift. We continue to look at opportunities to modernize our acreage reporting system, and a lot of effort around that. So lots of things going on at Farm Service Agency, and I guess I would entertain questions, or I don't know what the what the format is.
So now we do have a few minutes for questions. I just want to mention I'm in Morgan County, Colorado, and the fourth Monday of each month I visit with our county executive director.
Fantastic.
And go over programs and dates and deadlines, and it's a standing interview.
So good deal. That's good.
That. Yeah, I appreciate that very much. I guess the first question I have, sometimes the best question is other questions. So what are we have dairy in our area.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the producers, what are some of their biggest questions and or concerns on the new margin coverage program? I mean, what kinds of feedback are you getting on those changes so far?
Well, I think, so talking to dairy producers and dairy organizations, I think they're all very happy with the changes to the program. I believe that the opportunity to select higher coverage levels and the really drastically reduced premiums, were viewed as being very positive. And then the opportunity for producers to be able to use those dollars that they'd paid in under the old program, or a portion of those dollars, as a credit toward premium in the new program, was viewed very, very positive as well. So we know what the margin is for January, February, and March. So producers, when they sign up, in June, or have the opportunity to initiate sign up in June, they will already know, January, February, March, they'll already know at least 3 months of what that margin calculation is. So can maybe help them make decisions that are that would be advantageous to them at what level of what percentages, of coverage. So I think it's been a positive. At least what we've heard has been very positive.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Mike.
Richard, have you received any word, or are you making any preparations or plans for a new round of mitigation payments?
For some reason, I thought that question might come up. So I do know the vice president was in Minnesota late last week and indicated that the president was supportive of farmers. So I don't know. I think there's some conversations that are happening, certainly, but to speculate on what that would be or what it would look like, I do not know at this point.
Jeff. If you could review the rule book or share it to us on prevented plant and how that may play into this year and the decision that farmers going to make, and then secondly, with regard to loans, do you have enough money for what might be anticipated of increased requests for loans?
Yeah. So a couple of really good questions, I think, and certainly timely. The prevented plant question, I would probably defer to my my colleague at RMA to really kind of dig into what the prevented plant. The only way I would speak on prevented plant is what we may be considering at Fordyce Farms. I was home. I was in Missouri over the weekend, and it is wet, and like the top of a hill has water standing on it. Right. So, so I don't know. I didn't look at the I don't know what the crop progress report said as far as planting progress, but we planted, so we're in Northwest Missouri. We planted we started 2 weeks ago last Friday and planted Friday and Saturday, and that's the extent of our planting for 2019. But I see a lot of corn planted. When I was driving around, we were in St. Louis and then went to kind of South Missouri and then back up to Northwest Missouri. A lot of corn's planted, but it's going to be a while before, at least in that part of the country, before we're going to get back in the field. I did talk to a seed corn dealer at church on Sunday and asked him if anybody was returning seed corn. He said not yet, but he had been getting some calls. So, I don't know. I really shouldn't probably elaborate on prevent plant provisions, but I'm fairly certain that that's going to start coming into folks' mind, and seeing what those options are. As far as loans, I've been thinking that, you know, we're going to have a pretty strong run on demand. And talking to our deputy administrator for farm loan programs, he says the demand is maybe ticked up a little bit, but that, I mean, he's confident we'll have the resources necessary to support any requests that we have, at least this year.
All right, we have time for, excuse me, just a couple more questions. Joe?
Joe Gill from Minnesota. Just a quick question regarding the dairy margin program. There's some concern that the organic milk price is factored into that margin, therefore that's skewing kind of that margin. Can you comment on that, if that's true, if it is being factored in at all?
Well, that's a really good question that I honestly don't know the answer to. I really don't know what percentage of organic milk prices are figured into that margin calculation. I don't know. I can check on that and get back to you.
Ron, and then we'll do Melissa, and then we'll.
Mr. Administrator, Ron Hayes, Radio Oklahoma Ag Network, out of Oklahoma City. A lot of interest out across the country with the industrial hemp provisions of the 2018 farm law. What's the FSA role in developing those rules and regs, and what's the timeline?
So we don't have a very significant piece in writing the reg. That's that lives with AMS. You know, we've been telling folks that. You know, if you were growing industrial hemp under the provisions of the 14 Farm Bill, that's not going to in any way jeopardize your participation in farm programs or participation in farm loans. You know, we do have language that says if you're convicted of a controlled substance violation, that you no longer are eligible. But other than that, you know, things should be very similar to what they were under the 14 Farm Bill. You know that you know, when AMS completes their reg and it's posted, you know, so AMS is gonna look at state plans. They're gonna develop a national plan for producers that live in a state that doesn't have a state plan. You know, when that reg is finished and we understand what's in there, you know, then our role will change a little bit. But we really don't have a lot of jurisdiction over language in any regulation as it relates to hemp.
And Melissa.
Hey, Melissa.
By the way, he's like an hour from my house. When I type 4, by the way, it's like, do you mean 4 dice? And I'm like, no, this time. But anyway, just kind of talking about some of those disaster relief programs, I was talking with Director Chin, who is his replacement in the state of Missouri, and she was talking about some of these counties cannot really apply until we get some of this flooding out of the way, because, as you said, we're still very wet, especially in our part of the country. So even though we have so many counties applying right now for that disaster relief, how long is that going to go on, just because as the rains keep coming, as other things keep happening, it just seems like this keeps getting spread out, so we can't reach a point in where we can say, this is where we need to be.
Right. So there's really no deadline for producers to sign up under ECP and with the flooding concerns. And so that's been, you know, that's really been an issue. It's really hard, obviously, as you can imagine. It's nearly impossible to get an estimate on what that project will cost if there's water on it, because the ECP program probably, and I don't know what the percentage is, but it's going to be a significant percentage of the ECP practices that we do is going to be debris removal, and that debris can consist of, it could be trees. But a lot of sediment and sand and gravel can be taken off. The producer can take a field back to its original condition before the event. And so there really isn't, other than just the timeliness of getting that debris removed with hopes of trying to plant a crop, which, you know, as we get further down the calendar is going to be a little more problematic. There really isn't a deadline for them to be able to apply. So I wouldn't, they shouldn't be concerned about that. It's just that we need to get the work. We need to get in there and get the work done.
And yeah, and I guess that was maybe my point too, just kind of expanding on that. Like, how are we going to know, like, when is there going to be a cutoff time? Because as you said, at a point you just can't plant, and then when is that going to switch over from disaster, or is that going to stay disaster, or are we going to do something like prevent plant acres, things like that?
So I think those are two different things. You know, I would assume that, you know, if a producer has, you know, have fields that are not plantable, that would fall under the prevent plant provisions through RMA and those particular companies. But as far as the disaster recovery, we can continue to do that. You know, we will probably be removing sediment and sand this summer, for example. So not a concern from a deadline perspective to participate in the disaster piece, and then the prevent plant piece, I think, would be a separate issue.